Hey everybody, Scott here. Just a quick little update for you behind the scenes. I hope you're enjoying your wonderful summer as much as Alice and I are. We're taking a little bit of time off in the summer to enjoy, well, the summer. The kids are getting older. They're all going to be gone soon. So we're trying to spend as much time as possible. So we're going to bring you some of our favorite episodes from the past that maybe if you're one of the new 7 listeners, you haven't heard yet, or it bears repeating. Since we actually don't have guests on the show, the rare, very rare time we do, we like to bring in the people we love the most and we think can give you the most benefit. So on this replay of the On Podcast is going to be episode 63, a long, long time ago, but a wonderful episode with our good friend Ron Tight, who talks about everything from being funny to can anybody be funny and why we think he's so funny. I promise you it's applicable to your business, but you're going to get some laughs in there and you're going to learn a few things too. And isn't that what the summer's all about? I hope you're enjoying your summer. Enjoy.
In a world where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
There is no better way to spend $500 than on a movie voiceover guy from the trailer business. That was $512, by the way, for that guy to do that intro.
Totally worth it. I think Every penny.
When the agency, and I'll introduce you to the strange man in the room here.
Yeah, who's that?
He's the third person. Our second guest in the history.
I know. I was second guest ever.
Whoa.
I know.
Who's the first?
Chris
Farias.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Who's amazing. Who we won't bring back because he's too good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were worried, actually. I thought I was going to be replaced.
So we got the quote from you actually go to movietrailerguy.com or something like that. And it's an agency that represents voice talent, and they do the movie guy trailer. She writes back, and I said, okay, this is what we want to do. And she's like, okay, it's $500. I'm like, nice. And I sent the payment immediately. She's like, ooh, I went, all right, I should have said 1,000. Like she actually said that in the email. You replied way too quickly to that because I had no idea.
Right now.
And the dude in his home studio just read the thing and it took him, you know, 39 seconds.
But she also knows she's competing with Fiverr.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's like but that's just one octave below movie trailer you get for $5.
Because I got a guy for $5 and if I give him an extra $10, he'll rush it. So I'm not sure what this $500 is.
I think we've listened to it 8 million times. I have it on repeat. I just want to hear my voice, my name over and over again.
That's worth it.
Please welcome.
Yeah, yes. it's just
Allison
worth it
Kramer.
There.
Sounds so good.
So the third wheel today is our friend and yours, Ron Tight. I'm going to read the little bio.
Oh, sure.
The world to.
You guys do research?
Barely. This is the first research we've ever
does
done.
Research.
I have trained at the legendary Second City. Ron's being a comedian, speaker, host, and award-winning advertising writer and executive creative director. Currently, he is the president of the Tight Group, a content marketing agency based in Toronto. But more importantly than that, one of the funniest people I know, one of the best speakers there is in the business, and that takes a lot for me to say because I despise most people in this business.
Most people in general, I think.
Most people in general. And a man that we both enjoy seeing and hanging out and having time with, Ron. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. And thank you for those very kind words.
You pay well.
And I'm the CEO of the Tight Group. I know. I think there's probably a profile out there somewhere.
This is from thetightgroup.com.
Oh, great.
Last night.
So, Cobbler's Children Choose.
So this is why, we never do research, because it's never right anyway.
It's never right.
CEO of the Tight Group. Yeah, I don't even know the difference.
It's who cares? Because it's like my name's on the door. So the reality is I'm junior copywriter at the Tight Group. That's the reality.
I know how that feels. Yeah. I know how that feels. So what we're one of the ways that we connected outside of doing a lot of the Art of events in Canada, that's how we originally met, was Ron hosts this amazing event that, to explain it, it's actually not hard, but really, it sounds odd. Well, the title is called Monkey Toast, and it's something you do in Toronto every month?
Is it Monkey? Once a month, yeah.
Once a month.
Yeah.
And that I had the honor of being a guest of a little while ago. Explain to everybody listening right now, because it's a phenomenal thing, so explain Monkey Toast.
Well, what we do is we bring on guests who have just interesting backgrounds. And we just have a conversation, and I'm not a journalist, so I don't have an axe to grind. I have no agenda. I just want a conversation. And throughout the conversation, I'll just break it up and say, you know what? Let's stop right there and let's see some comedy. And I turn it over to six of the most brilliantly talented improvisers in the country, most kind of Second City alum, who then improvise scenes based on the conversation we've just had. And so it's not a direct parody all the time, but it's certainly inspired by the conversation. And so, you know, the audience loves it because they get this really great educational component of just a great laid back conversation. And then they see that extended into the comedic space just brilliantly. And the improvisers always take it in places that you don't ever expect they're going to take it to. And a little bit of learning, a little bit of laughing.
So smart.
It's a good show.
So smart.
It's really fun.
As a professional audience member,
you did very well.
Many talks that Scott speaks at around the world, I was thoroughly entertained and I loved it. I thought it was amazing and I love improv. So it was genius.
It was a great show. And thanks to you guys for coming out because normally the reaction is, so what do you want me to do? what am I in for? Am I going to be made fun of? You know,
I'm good. 5-6 comedians just mock me the whole time. Right, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where do I sign up for that? Yeah.
Mind you, I would sign up for that.
Completely.
I would go to the roast of Scott Weekly. I think it would be a phenomenal thing. But it's a very unique. And the house was packed.
Yeah. We typically sell out. This past weekend, or 2 weeks ago, we had to turn people away. And
one of the guys from Whose Line Is It Anyway? Is it
Colin Mockery was in the cast. Yeah. Colin joins when he can. He's a busy guy.
Of course.
So he was in the cast last show, and we had Jesse Brown from Canada Land and Preet Banerjee from Million Dollar Neighborhood and the CBC. And those two guests were more identical in their perspective, at least being traditional media folks, than typically. I think, you know, one of the best guests we've ever had was a gay beekeeper from upstate New York. You know, like where do you begin?
I was about to say it was going to be Scott Stratton, but I'll take that. So that's even
well,
better.
Yeah. You were number two.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just the guests you don't think, you're like, what? Like, who are we signing up for this? Like,
but the ability to play off that then on an improv side of things.
Yeah.
How much? I have a question. How much of the information about the guests did the improvisers have before? Like, do they have any information? So it's also for them. It's just kind of, they're learning the whole time too.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's very cool.
I don't tell them anything. I don't tell them. The only time, you know, this past show, when we had Jesse on, and you know, obviously, you can't have Jesse Brown on and not talk about the Gian Gomeshi story. Yeah. And
so, Jesse Brown, for people listening, is the investigative journalist who runs Canada Land, who is pretty much the anchor of the Gomeshi scandal revelations.
Yeah, yeah.
And more stuff after that.
And to our American listeners, you can Google that if you haven't heard it. But it was a massive story.
Gomeshi reached the States for sure. Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
My brother in Texas heard about it.
Yeah. Well, and I thought, you know, we can't not talk about that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how you're gonna make that funny.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of gave them a heads up and said, look, in the middle set, I'm gonna talk about Gian, and so just be prepared to reach back to the previous
for the comedy
question segment
for the comedy
for those cues to drive the improv. In the end, of course, they were able to take the Gian Gomeshi stuff and make it brilliantly funny. But that's really the extent of what I'll give them as a heads up.
Now, as somebody, because you being Second City trained yourself, and as what I found fascinating to me and what I don't understand, although for me talking, and I try to use humor in my talks, and what are the improvers thinking while somebody like me is answering the questions? They just think there and go, I can use that, I can use that, I can use that. It's pretty much how it is.
Yeah, they're not mapping out long scenes. They're just pulling references, right? Like, oh, okay, lives in Oakville. Okay, I can use that.
Right. Wish they did.
Yeah. And that's what they're doing, because you don't, when you go on to the stage as an improviser, you may think you've got this whole scene figured out and you're going to talk to your son, and then the other person joins you and they call you, you know, they call you honey or something, you know, and you're like, oh, this is not what I intended. So you're gonna have to change it up anyhow.
But that's the rules of improv, right? There's only a certain set of rules for improv, right?
Yeah.
You gotta go with whatever people are saying, and it's always yes
positive,
and
yeah, add to right, it. Right.
I wish people in business would treat conversations the same way, right? Because we typically in business, we put up all those barriers of like why we can't do it, why it won't work, when we did it last year. Opposed to going, you know what, this initial suggestion may not be the thing, but let's riff on it a little bit. And we may get to a point 5 or 6 generations down the conversation where you're like, now we've landed on something that's really interesting. We wouldn't have got there if we had put up the barricades, you know, in the first generation of the conversation.
It's one of the things we talk about collaboration. is that that ability to just say yes to whatever ideas are kind of coming out and build from there is a huge part of why we're able to work together. And we saw it watching them on stage. It was really cool.
But the art of the riff, the ability to just bounce ideas, is actually something that is said a lot in businesses and creative sessions and brainstorming sessions. It's said a lot, meaning we're going to do this. But in reality, politics come into play, past behavior comes into play, to the point where people don't want to say their idea because it'll get squashed, because a wall will get put up. And a true thing like seeing an improv stage like that is your job is to bring that person up, is to work, make their story work, so I'm going to make it work.
Yeah.
It would be fascinating if a workplace ever worked. When I've seen Second City come and do, you know, workshops with corporations, that type of thing. But actual collaboration, actual ability to bring out ideas and have people play with that is so rare yet amazing when you see it.
Yeah, I found that, you know, when I was a young creative in advertising, and, you know, the typical creative team is a copywriter, art director. And I had partners where you were just so comfortable with one another that you could go away and just throw out dumb ideas. Mm-hmm. Because you just know the other person isn't judging you by your dumb ideas. They're judging you by the final output. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, to me, is the biggest barrier to great collaboration, is that you just don't trust the person. And if you don't trust them to not judge you by your stupid ideas, you're never going to get to the great ideas.
Right.
And so you'd have a new partner and you'd be like, how about this? And, you know, person be like, oh, maybe. And you're like, this, you know, opposed to saying, well, that's dumb. That's a really dumb idea, but what can we do with that?
Yeah.
Let's save it.
There's a reason that came out of your face. So let's run with that.
Yeah.
And then to take that and add something, like to the trust to be able to let the person's idea be allowable, and then to say, okay, so, you know, if that's this, then, okay, let's also do this, I think is where that next step comes.
So much is involved, though, with the problem with, you know, in organizations. For the very short career that I had in them, is that, you know, it's just people are so concerned about who gets credit.
Yep.
You know, and if it goes wrong, who gets blame?
Yep.
And a boss doesn't want to give subordinate credit because it makes them look dumb. You know, there's so...
In advertising, they literally, it is a written credit for an award show. It is like copywriter was Ron Tite.
Yeah.
And you're like, how come my name's not on the thing? Because I contributed like the tag, you know, people fighting over that.
You know, my hell... My actual living, breathing hell would be handcuffed to a chair at an ad award show.
I love when I'd talk to like people who don't work in advertising, right? And you were like, "Oh, I won an award," and their response would typically be, "You people give each other awards, really, for a 30-second commercial with
you got paid for
a mom drinking a juice in a kitchen?" Like, yes. The very important.
Very important.
Very important.
Dude, Seinfeld did a talk to the Clio or something.
Yeah, right? Like, that's right. With the Clio.
Yeah, you guys are more full of yourself than we are. You know, and we just saw the shares and the tweets from the marketing magazine awards show and stuff. And we absolutely love everybody over there. But damn it, if there was not 79 awards.
A lot of awards.
Like it's like, and our next is you did something last Wednesday, and here's your award.
Best 30-second TV commercial produced on a Wednesday with a budget of under $50,000 in a not-for-profit space.
For clients with that start with K.
Yeah.
And it's like everybody who bought a table got an award. That's pretty much it. You gave us money, and you gave us money. Everybody gets an award who gave us some money.
Yeah.
But then every industry has it.
And that's what I was like. I'm sure you guys have done it. You go to a speaking, and you're like, well, you're kicking off the sales... Is it like the president's circle?
It's always the president's real estate circle. Ones are the best, right?
Right.
With the president senior, there's like 17 awards on there. Not enough room for a house picture anywhere.
No.
But all their awards. And it's all simply just, it's top 5%. I've never seen anybody been in the bottom 95% of any real estate company ever.
And all I know is that eventually that list of people, they go on a cruise to Aruba. The president's circle. This year, it's always that reveal. Like, you know, we're going to Punta Cana this year, but where are we going next year? This will motivate you. Lovely, beautiful Cancun. I can't think of anything worse than having to go on a sales award trip.
With a bunch of other
salespeople talking about how their elevator pitch or something.
And who you've potentially been competing against the entire year, by the way.
There's a whole skit there.
And there's Frank. He was number one. But you know why he was number one? Because it's like high school at a very secluded spot
yeah.
the entire time. And I've spoken to him. We did that in Puerto Rico. And yeah. for the speaker, it's great. yeah. I couldn't give a rat's ass about anybody in this place. I don't got to sell anything. We just sat by that pool. I got to talk for an hour twice.
Yeah.
Like, it's just in 5 days. We did
in a sunny destination.
In a sunny, wonderful destination. Yeah.
I think the
incentive trip is probably the best gig in the town.
It's everyone's just, happy.
Yeah, nobody's doing the incentive gig to Timmins, Ontario. No. Like, it doesn't happen that way.
I love
with your inner grizzly animal.
They have birthplace of Shania. They got enough. They don't need any more credit than that. But that's what you get to do the nice things. It's awesome. And like, you did the best this year. So to congratulate you, here's a marketing speaker. who doesn't sell anything in your industry at all has never done what you've done.
And an all-you-can-eat buffet.
You're welcome.
Scott Stratton, Allison Kramer, and an all-you-can-eat buffet.
And we're parasailing tonight.
So, everybody come to the beach. Yeah.
By the way, your highest sales total ever is now the ground floor goal next year. Just a heads up, right? Okay, good. You bust your ass this year, but next year, that's your beginning.
So. And it's always the same people, too, right? Once again, here's Kathy. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, that Kathy. She's
always
she's like 18 years in a row. She's
Diamond
been in President Circle.
President Emerald Circle. And there's Chet. Oh, he's in Skokie. Skokie gets a lot of sales in that area. He's really happy. And they all make more than the president.
They all make more than the president.
Yeah. Well, I had that when I was in the packaging company. The president of the company said, and I was sitting at the table when he said, he's like, we have to change our sales comp system. And one of the guys like, why? Three of the salesmen make more than I do. Like, they're on commission. You know what commission means? Right. It means they're selling more than anybody else. It's like, we need to cut it. Like, nobody can be helping.
You're overhead.
Yeah. Yeah. You are actually the problem here, sir. And so he cut the three salaries and then they quit.
Yeah,
wow.
And you lost not the commission. You lost the clients.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars. But that's it. We're talking about how politics play into things and what's the best idea. I don't, which by the way, he shouldn't even have to see their salary. It's commission based.
Yeah.
Zero salary, by the way.
Yeah. They're taking a lot of risk.
100% commission. And since they actually did what you asked them to, that we're now just having a pissing match and like, nope, you can't. All three of them gone.
Yeah, that's right. I'm the lowest paid person at our agency.
And it should be.
Seriously, I'm the lowest paid person at the agency.
But that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Because the president has equity in the company.
Right, yeah.
The sales guys don't.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good gig for everybody else.
It is.
I made a very conscious decision to, not pull money out of the agency to try and reinvest that to grow the agency. And now, granted, for the speaking stuff, and that works out quite well. But
it's a nice world.
It's a nice world.
I like it.
But I think it says sends a strong message to the agency that, like, hey, we're going to build this up so everybody wins.
Right.
And I'm more than willing to take, part of the risk. And there's a great motivator. Because if people just sit back and go, I'm working my tail off till midnight every night, and you're getting everything.
Yeah. That's not a good
motivator. To go home at 5.
Yeah.
Not a great motivator.
Doesn't it make people want to stay?
Nope.
And your job to me as a company is to attract and retain great people.
Yeah.
And then they'll stay with you.
Yeah.
And in your industry, being in an agency world, that is the fluctuation is so crazy.
Yeah.
You drop a key client and you drop half your staff.
Yep.
You get a key client and you double it.
Yep.
And that's where, so there's a lot of up and down, up and down, but that loyalty is an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Where it can be diehard loyalty if the leader is believing in it versus a manager. We get into that talk before, we're talking about leaders versus managers, and people will follow a leader and they'll have to listen to a manager.
Yeah, we just had this talk with our crew on Friday, and because someone went to a different agency, and there was this belief, I think, that that's a bad thing. Someone's leaving, they must be really unhappy and there's something wrong here. And I just said to everybody, like, hey, like, we have to talk about your career goals, and you have to be really happy in your career. And if we can change something or chase something to make you happier here, then we'll do that. And if we can't, and we're not going to be able to meet the things you want, tell me. I'll help you find that special gig. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to take it personally that you don't want to work here, you don't like working here, that we all need really specific things that make us happy. And if we don't get them in the place where we are, it's nothing against that organization. Let's work together to make everybody happy.
One of the companies we talk about it a lot, like, from big ass fans, and we talk about the head of that company, they do a lot of scholarships. So they'll send, kids to school. They're in Kentucky and they're known for paying like way above average wage, and they do all these scholarships. And we interviewed him for Unselling and asked him, you know, so what's the deal? Right. You do this scholarship, there's a full pay and all this stuff. What do you do? And
he said, lock him in for 5 years.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, like, what's the deal? And he said, well, either we have a great employee who comes back and works for them, and we certainly hope they come back and work for us, or we made a friend who's very successful somewhere else. And I'm like, that's so great. He's like, the last thing I want is somebody working for me who doesn't want to work for me. He's like,
it's one of the most refreshing things I've ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they
move
people around a lot in the company. Like, you know, if you're interested, you can go talk to them and say, I want to check out this part. I want to check out this part. He's like, we would rather know and let them give it a try than find out they're bitter and then they're gone.
Yeah.
We take it so personally. Right?
Yeah.
We think someone's leave, they're breaking up with us.
Yep.
I was so impressed with that, with the investment in a student, just because, well, then we'll have a friend, and what's wrong? How could we go wrong?
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Those things come back.
That's amazing.
They come back. All you have to do is take care of people in business, I think.
But there's non-competes and there's this, and you're like, if they're not happy, they're not happy.
Yeah.
Now, if they're pulling clients, and that's a different business type of thing, but then if you don't trust the people that work for you, then they shouldn't be working for you.
Yeah,
that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, right? I love all those questions. Be like, how do you handle the Gen X, you know, like the millennials, and how do you handle this? And if people want to, like, why don't you just hire good people and trust them?
Yeah.
And
it's never gone wrong, whatever generation it's been in.
No, it doesn't. Just
and we know how
them.
They're doing before they're leaving.
Yeah.
It's not an exit thing. Like, they're gone and we don't know why. Like, we know things are going on. We leave it open.
Most companies, though, are like, we only find out about our employees once we do the exit interview.
Yeah.
What did we do wrong a year and a half ago that we could have fixed for you and kept you here and then done nothing? It's like doing the breakup interview. What could I have done 7 months ago?
You just wanted me to brush my teeth?
I could have done that. I got a toothbrush right here.
I could have done that.
Right? But that's it. Because if you don't ask, and then, of course, the most focus and attention we give to somebody is when they're leaving.
Yep.
And then, you know, it's also when they're the most honest, when they don't need the job
anymore. Seriously.
But we could have fixed it.
Yeah.
Or if we couldn't, we at least could say, okay, well, I'll keep my eyes open for you.
Totally.
But instead, we have employees who are trying to go through a Tor browser onto LinkedIn and Monster so you can't tell that I'm looking for a job.
I know.
And we have IT blocking.
Followed by the, I've got a doctor's appointment.
I've got
3 days in a row. Really?
You're so well dressed for your doctor's appointment.
Really?
I like that haircut you got.
Doctor.
You're giving him a copy of your resume, I see. That's great. Awesome.
Fantastic.
Good luck with that.
Carrying seven highly effective bits of paperwork. Wow.
Dr. Stephen Covey.
That's right. Well played. But that's it. I think, you know what? Talking about branding, because branding also happens internally in a company, not just externally.
Yeah.
With what, you know, the market sees. Is that person goes somewhere else, and then everybody talks to everybody.
Yep.
It just happens that way.
Yep.
And then we say, well, if you're looking for this, well, have you heard about, what about the Tight Group? Well, they're actually amazing. I wish I didn't leave. Or I did, but they were amazing when I went.
Yeah.
That just builds bonds.
Yep.
And you're going to work with each other eventually on something, right? It always happens.
100%.
Right? You're sharing with something. There's a co-agency thing. There's different disciplines that are known. And coming out with animosity or something versus it makes it a whole different world. You have a cheerleader. And that's what I love about the Big Ass Fans as well. It's like, we have a friend somewhere else.
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
No,
Of saying, if you don't want to be here, it's okay. Because you'll spend 10 times the effort trying to get you to stay than saying, you know what, you're probably okay. It's better too.
Yeah.
It might be better for us.
Yeah. I had a young guy with us, and I just thought, he really needs a big agency. And there's just no real place for him here because he just needs that structure. And instead of just letting him go and saying, you need a big agency, I actually went and got him a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you need a big agency, and here you go. There's one for you.
Right.
And they're interviewing you on Monday. And he's still there.
Yeah.
And it's so great. And eventually, if he, you know, gets to a point where he wants to come to a smaller entrepreneurial shop, then we're there.
Yeah.
And if not, I've got a friend somewhere else.
But then you don't
and
have
you
that.
Got someone, a great employee that you, yeah, when yeah, you could yeah. recommend somebody. It's everybody kind of wins in that sort of situation.
Yeah, you win favor with the company that's got it and this person as well. And at the end of the day, it always comes back in spades. Whether that means it's goodwill or referrals, or maybe he wants to, we'll come back one day.
Yeah.
And that's just, and it just never hurts to take people into consideration.
There's a great advertising story, a legendary story of a guy who was running a big piece of business for an agency, and he got fired by the agency, and they didn't treat him that well, you know, kind of escorted him to the door, everything else. 2 weeks later, he shows up as the client, and they said, oh, we get it. We're big boys and girls here. You're going to fire us, just like we fired you, and that's fine. And he said, oh, no. No, I'm going to keep you on.
I have plans for you.
That's way better. That's way more sinister. Hi, it's midnight. I need that by 9 a.m. Click. I'm at home. Courier it to me. Click.
Can you make it a little more yellow, little less, I don't know, wavy?
I want to see five more
ideas.
Yeah,
that's just not quite where I was hoping I was going to get.
I'm going to put a pin in that.
Torture them forever.
That's a genius. Well, there was this story that went around, did the rounds last week about the guy who pretty much told him to F off because he knocked into a subway.
Yeah.
And then he goes and he's actually the guy interviewing the guy for the job. And it's just like, it's just that it doesn't.
You never know who you're talking to.
Never
you should just
know.
Treat people well.
Hold the door open for everybody.
But we
just
had that.
Be kind. It's so much simpler.
2 weeks
that way.
Ago. So I did three gigs for a company doing their kickoffs this year. And I won't name them. It was Ameriprise. And and awesome. So I go to Palm Springs, in California first. And we're going to do two in Phoenix. And they originally weren't going to hire me. They were concerned that I wouldn't adhere to the dress code, which is true.
Which is very true.
They're very accurate. The research was very
well
done.
Very few companies have a t-shirt and jean dress code.
It's
right.
It's mostly, unless it's Maui Jim.
Need to adhere to our dress code.
Yeah. This is how this is going to work. But I was willing to walk away. And that's where, I guess it's where leverage comes in. And they're like, we want to change and your difference and all that stuff, but we got to make you look the same. And that's pretty much what they asked. And I said, this is what I'll wear a dress shirt. I'm just going to roll up the sleeves. Like, I'll conform, but I won't like it. That's exactly how it was.
And I'll be uncomfortable.
I'll be more grumpy. So I went in, and I guess where my room was in Palm Springs, I went through like the service entrance of the area, and I walked in to the actual main area through the back curtain and walked out. And of course, there's like three executives there and the guy running the event. And I walk in looking like I do for my sound check and a little bit early. The guy's like, excuse me, sir, can I help you with something? Like, hey, I'm your keynote. He's like, oh, God, you do not look like your picture. Like, that was
good save.
You do not look like your picture. Like, no facial hair in the picture.
You have a beard now. Yeah. I see.
I look less Jesus-like in my picture that you have in your program that I did not authorize.
I love those. Oh, hey, you found the photo from high school. Thank you for
including that. You had to dig deep.
With seven different high-res photos.
That's page five.
And you Googled, you deep Googled. You went page five Google image search. Right. Because you like the angle of it. That's awesome. Thank you. That's your fault. But then, I've had this so many times, especially with, I guess, especially if I could just get off a plane, I got my ball cap on, my hoodie, and I show up, and they're just like, Who are you? Yeah. But on the flip side, more than that, I'm surprised how many events just let me walk in. No badge, nothing.
You're taking muffins.
Yes.
Right. That muffin's like $8 at a hotel muffin is $8.
You and I talked about this on Facebook, right? We're going to do Conference Crashers.
Yeah. Which I still think is such an amazing movie idea.
I think it's perfect. We walk in and just like Wedding Crashers, we're going to go, as we walk in, okay, you're going to be the author guy. I'll be the bobsled guy from Team Canada. They wear helmets anyways.
You wrote that line. That's right. I thought it was a really funny line. Bobsled guy? Yeah, they wear helmets. They're not going to recognize
them. They're not going to recognize them. Gold medal. Okay, cool. Do this.
And well, Scott got picked up at the airport for a conference in Florida with another guy, and he got taken to the wrong hotel. And they had a whole conversation about the conference, which was not the same conference.
So we go down. He's like, so you're here for the conference? I'm like, yeah, of course. You? He's like, yeah.
He's sitting behind me.
It's really weird. He's sitting behind me, and I'm talking. He's like, so how long have you been in the industry? And I'm like, I've been doing this part of about five, 6 years. He's like, cool. Yeah, I've been about 12 years. I'm like, nice. I've never heard of this guy. He called the conference some weird name. I thought it was a nickname.
Right.
So we're talking, and he's like, and so we're riffing.
He called it the Mining and Exploration Summit. And you're like, I don't know that acronym.
It's a weird, So we're riffing, but it's not connecting as well as it could, which is weird. And I'm like, well, our industry's pretty tiring. And he's like, yeah, I know, I get it. And we pull up to the wrong hotel when I'm not staying. And he goes like, hey, I got to take this call. Yes? All right. Okay, did you give the shot of estrogen? No? All right, I'll do a call. Yeah. What surgery? Okay.
Oh, God.
Gets off the phone. I'm like, what was that, his wife? Oh, he's at the surgeon convention in Sarasota.
I love it.
And I'm like,
and he's looking at you, and he's already like stereotyping you with your look. Like it must be an OB-GYN. Right? He must be, I don't know whoever the rocker doctor is. Yeah.
Oh, he's a carb, right?
He's a carb. A plastic surgeon.
Plastic.
Capitalist practice surgeons.
Jack, our industry is so tiring.
Don't save lives. I got a trap. He's like, yeah, I know. I'm like, yeah,
I know that
heart the surgeon
people
man.
That die on the table. You're like, yeah, like,
yeah.
I know.
When your gig dies on the table, nobody laughs. And he gets out. I look at the driver. I'm like, this is my hotel. She's like, oh, it's that's wrong. That's can we drive out now? Because quick, I think quick. I just agreed to do a workshop for these guys on how to do, you know, a triple bypass
using Skype. The Skype bypass.
Yeah. So our glorious, glorious world of what we do. But that's I want to talk about this actually of about people being funny.
Yeah.
From a man who is one of the funniest people I know. Who's not here right now. That was funny.
So that was very funny. So, Steve Patterson.
And again, I of the school, you can't teach a certain part of timing or comedy. Yep. I think you certainly take lessons and improv lessons and type of thing. But is humor always appropriate in business? Like I always come, because when I go do a talk or read the book, they're like, well, it's funny. We should do funny content.
Yeah.
And like, where's the danger in that? Do you ever see that?
Yeah, I think... well, I mean, comedy now is at a point where nobody ever gets offended anymore, right? They only get offended on behalf of other people. Right? So if you tell a joke about the packaged goods guy or the accountant in the room, the accountant, he's laughing. It's the person beside the accountant who goes, I can't believe you said that about Jim. So you do have to be really careful. But what I think where people can learn is that the process of comedy can be applied without being funny. Mm-hmm. So by that I mean, and I think you're one of the best comedians on stage. You have the timing, you have the insight, everything. But the rule of comedy is that you gather an insight, something that makes you go, I hadn't thought of it that way. But that's not the thing, right? That's the what's the deal with QR codes? Mm-hmm. Well, that's not funny in itself. It's where you take it and how do you extrapolate it and how do you exaggerate it and do you bring in, you know, characters into that and are there punchlines and how do you establish the beats within the mm-hmm. set? All that stuff. And so you can land on a punchline where they go, that's funny. I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah.
Or you land on a strategic insight where they go, oh, I hadn't thought of it that way. So whether you get silence in the room or you get uproarious laughter, I think it's the exact same process. Mm-hmm. And I think too many people worry about being funny opposed to being impactful or relevant.
And that's the biggest thing. Once you just want the laughs, or do you want to make an impact?
Yeah, I mean, personally, because I used to do custom corporate comedy sets where I'd go in for half an hour and just do straight comedy.
That's a tough gig, man.
It's a tough gig. Yeah. It's a tough gig because you're writing stuff on the fly you heard that day and you'll never be able to use it again, right? It doesn't scale well.
No,
by the way, you're making a third of what their speaker is making because comedy always sits at the kids' table. It's a Woody Allen line, right? They're like, that's so clever what you do, you know? Meanwhile, we're going to pay this dude over here to recite the same speech.
Say the same thing.
I want to be that guy who's making way more. But I got way more satisfaction out of the silence that followed the laugh than ending on the laugh. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, yeah, I can set up the insight with the comedy. And when you finish the bit, boom, the room goes silent. And then you deliver the strategic line or what you want them to learn. And they're really open to learning it, opposed to, you know, flipping it the other way.
They're really paying attention, too.
They're really paying attention.
You've gotten their attention. And then the line, you do it, too. I don't even know if you do it like you mean to do it. But the joke is often kind of like you get their attention. They're laughing. And then there's like a silence. And then it's like, okay, so now
I think if you laugh, you listen. Right?
Yeah, and I've seen you talk about, you know, like brands responding to crises, and you kind of set it up with a little bit of humor,
right?
And some examples, and then you deliver this line of like if something happened, just shut up, right? Mm-hmm. Just shut up, and you can tell people are like, oh, this is the serious. I should be stop the laughter, and they totally get it, and that line has way more impact because it's been preceded by some really insightful comedy.
Right, and that's where. I had to get to this point of being comfortable with silence, with the pause.
Yeah,
that's a hard thing to do in front of people.
I don't think that's even unique for comedy. I think that's any time we see someone speaking and it's really impactful, whether they're doing it on the serious, making the impact be serious or making the impact be funny, timing is just so much a part of it. And if you're not able to get the timing, you're not going to be impactful or funny or anything, because it's if you're caught up in your own head and you can't take that time to get there.
Yeah, and the only thing that gets the timing, and this is where, you know, people are like, so you've done comedy and so therefore you must just sit down and type away and it's like, no, actually, it's like stage time.
Yeah.
And so the reason the timing on that bit is really good is because I've done it 100 times right. and I've worked the timing out and I know where people respond and I'm always playing with it. But it's just stage time. It's just rehearsal. Mm-hmm. It's the 10,000 hours, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when you've done it and you just have to be open to, taking in the reaction of the crowd and then adapting your material.
And the ability to adapt, where people get up there and say, "I have a script," and yeah. and they, I've heard the line, "I just got to get through this stuff."
I just, it's like, oh wow, I really want to listen to you.
I can't wait. Yeah. I just got to get through these 47 points.
Yeah,
and I'm done. don't go up on stage. And that's, well, and talking about timing and everything else too. That's why it's always a joy when a client wants to go through your slide deck and say, "Can we take that out? Can we take like, yeah, I understand this is a puzzle, but it comes all together."
Yeah,
and one, you say a joke, and one of the favorite things, and you do it. Too is and really well. You pull a reference to an earlier joke, an
right.
earlier thing that happened, and that's just it's all. And when they come in and say, "Well, I just don't like that," and maybe that won't work with our audience.
Yeah.
And take out that bit.
Yeah,
take out that part. And I'm like, just let me do my job.
Yeah, the reference back is a callback
yeah.
in comedy terms,
right?
And a callback is the way to it's that. You know, last little button before you can move on to the next bit. You're like, see, I took you back to the beginning. Now I'm leapfrogging forward.
Yeah.
And you just keep doing that. And then the very end of your set should be a callback to the very beginning.
Right.
And that's how the crowd knows, oh, it's over.
It's over and he's done.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's where I truly think it's an art that I think that you can teach people to present better. And
it's a craft. It's like people are quick and there's quickness. And an ability to run with things, and then there's practice, together it's a craft. And you see people who get really good, either collaborating really well or in that single person talk. But it's a combination.
It's a performance,
yeah.
Too,
yep. But I think it's one of the reasons sometimes some of our worst stories are like humor on Twitter, for example, where it gets really quick and there's no reaction because you're at a computer, and then it's kind of no practice either, and that's why it can get.
Twitter's not a great place to test out a bit.
No,
you don't pull that back anytime.
No, but you know what's funny is I think the stand-up world. What you don't want people to think is you don't want them to think a bit is funny.
Mm.
What you want them to think is that you're funny.
Right.
So they should be thinking that you're just making this up on the spot. And I think we've seen this in speaking where when you look at, the old school speakers, and I say that respectfully to the mm-hmm. people who have paved the road mm-hmm. for which the three of us can now walk down, mm-hmm. that there was an earlier generation of corporate speakers who were really polished
right.
and really scripted, and everything, every beat was, the hand went out on this, mm-hmm. you know. And what I'm finding, and this really is some insight into consumer behavior, that they don't like that. They because it's scripted and it's not authentic and it doesn't feel genuine. And you've got to build in some imperfection mm-hmm. in your presentations so that people think, oh, like this is the first time you've actually delivered this talk.
Right.
If they sit back and think this is the 4 millionth time you've delivered this talk,
right.
it's going to fall flat. And they're going to feel cheated. And you're like, oh, you're just pressing rewind and pressing play.
It's out of a can.
Yeah. It's out of a can. And I think that says a lot of where consumers' minds are at, is that they want brands to be real and authentic. And with that comes imperfection.
I saw a guy a month or two ago, was right before I was going on, and he asked how many people in the room and a show of hands, and maybe one out of 300 put up their hand. He's like, so the majority of you did it. Like he was shot up against his script.
Yeah.
That I'm like, if you're going to ask for the hands of the audience, you better make sure those hands are going up.
Yeah.
Right. Who here doesn't want to die? Yeah. It's just like, get a softball question.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was,
and it's not to say, you know, we don't work on perfecting the bits.
Right.
But
because even the spontaneity can be practiced.
100%. 100%.
The timing and everything.
Yeah. It's just not delivered to sound perfect. It's delivered to sound authentic.
Yeah.
It speaks to the message you're selling, too. If you're trying to sell people that as a brand, they should be trying to be authentic and reacting and stuff. You can't go up and be, you know, super polished as well.
And that's one of my issues about not wearing a full suit when I'm talking.
Like,
you want authenticity and imperfection, and you want to talk about being part of a community. Why am I walking up with a full suit on and everything else? It's just, and then I realized I finally figured out the line that makes them stop talking when they say about my attire. I said, I dress like your customer. And they're like, Oh, we don't even believe that. That's good. But that's good. That's good anyways, though. You're lying,
Our customers are accountants. Rebel accountants.
Rebel accountants. Yeah,
we are actually in the formal attire business, so our customers are actually wearing tuxes. So you lost that.
I like when you say silver. So many suits. That's
every
favorite.
Time I get up, that's my opening so line from now on. I look suits. Around, it's like, so many suits.
But that's everyone laughs.
That's addressing the elephant in the room when I get up there, and who the hell is this guy?
Yep.
And what I've been selling insurance for 37 years, and this Canadian guy, you know, 90% of my gigs are in the States. Yeah. Like, right. But also one of the things, and talking about comedy to wrap it up, is that I never have in my bio, and I make sure of it, that they never say comedian.
Right.
Some of them will go off the cuff. He's like, the funniest guy I've ever seen speak. I'm like, you're horrible. You're such a jackass.
Yeah, horrible.
You know, because you're the line for being funny in a business talk is like Kelvin. Like, it's like, it's so low that we can be geniuses on stage with nothing. But as soon as you say he's a comedian, goes all the way up to the top.
And then like, really?
Put, cross our arms, like, let's make me laugh.
Let's see some jokes.
Yeah. What you got there, jokey jokes?
Say something funny.
That's it. That's the problem. It's always these expectations.
Yep.
So if Scott's going to talk about marketing, they're like, oh, girl, this is going to be terrible.
Yep.
You come out.
Yeah. I made a very conscious decision, one, to stop accepting corporate comedy gigs, and two, to stop saying I was a comedian.
Yeah.
Because you're right. The expectations are completely different. And I'd much rather be a business guy who happens to be funny opposed to a funny guy who happens to know a little bit about business. Because they're never going to buy that you know as much about business if you're the funny guy.
Never, never.
As insightful as you can be, they're not going to buy it. No. And it's that pat on the head, and you're so clever, I don't know how you do that, but here's a third of the fee that the next guy's
getting.
The
business speaker gets paid better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then and you're much – I swear if we did a split test of this, which we won't because it would take effort, but imagine having an audience and half the audience listen to you being told you're a comedian and half the audience being told you're a business speaker.
Yeah.
I swear they got the ratings would be have a monumental shift.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like your information wouldn't be as good. Same thing. Yeah. He's a comedian.
He didn't really know much about her. He doesn't know about our business.
And the other side of the room is like, yeah, he really knew about it, right? It's the same. I'm telling you, it's just context.
Yep.
It's audience context.
It's that blue ocean kind of thing, right? Yeah. Where it's like, I made a decision like, I think there's room to create something, a different definition of comedy. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, you know, a lot of my friends who are still club comics and, you know, they're on the road touring. It's not that type of comedian, but it's a type of comedian. I'm not exactly sure if I want to define it.
Right.
There's comedy integrated into it. It's just not the traditional definition.
Right. Well, then I'm going to end it with something that wasn't even funny. That's upsetting. Funny people sitting at this table, and that was a really great point. It's silence, though.
It was a great point.
Ron, thank you for being the second guest of all time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having
it. We'll see you all at Monkey Toast sometimes. And if you're not in Toronto listening to this, get your ass up here and come to the show.
Yeah.
It's amazing. The Tight Group. Ron Tight, everybody, from Allison, from myself, from all the crew here. We'll talk to you next week.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.